The Tao of Pooh, Part 7. That sort of bear. We were discussing the Ode to Joy, the choral finale to Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. "It's one of my favorites," said Pooh. "Same here," I said. "My favorite part," said Pooh, "is where they go, 'Sing ho for the life of a bear.' But sing ho for a bear. Sing ho for a Pooh. But they don't sing ho for the life of a bear. My favorite part," he added. "But they don't sing ho for the life of a bear in the Ode to Joy," I said. "They don't?" "No, they don't." "Why not?" "Well, because they hadn't thought of it, I guess." "They what?" Neither Ludwig van Beethoven nor the man who wrote the words of the Ode to Joy put anything in it about bears. "Oh, I must have been thinking of Ludwig van Beethoven." "Pooh, there is no Ludwig van Beethoven. You wrote that song yourself."
"I did?"
"That's right." "Oh, so that's where I heard it," he said. But anyway, that brings us to what we're going to discuss here: enjoying life and being special. Everyone is special, you know. "It is hard to be brave," said Piglet, sniffling slightly, "when you're only a very small animal." Rabbit, who had begun to write very busily, looked up and said, "It is because you are a very small animal that you will be useful in the adventure before us." Piglet was so excited at the idea of being useful that he forgot to be frightened anymore, and when Rabbit went on to say that Kangas were only fierce during the winter months, being at other times of an affectionate disposition, he could hardly sit still. He was so eager to begin being useful at once. "What about me?" said Pooh sadly. "I suppose I shan't be useful." "Never mind, Pooh," said Piglet comfortingly. "Another time, perhaps." "Without Pooh," said Rabbit solemnly, as he sharpened his pencil, "the adventure would be impossible." "Oh," said Piglet, and tried not to look disappointed. But Pooh went into a corner of the room and said proudly to himself, "Impossible without me, that sort of bear." No matter how useful we may be, sometimes it takes us a while to recognize our own value. This can be illustrated by the Chinese story of the stonecutter. There was once a stonecutter who was dissatisfied with himself and with his position in life. One day he passed a wealthy merchant's house, and through the open gateway saw many fine possessions and important visitors. "How powerful that merchant must be," thought the stonecutter. He became very envious and wished that he could be like the merchant. Then he would no longer have to live the life of a mere stonecutter. To his great surprise, he suddenly became the merchant, enjoying more luxuries and power than he had ever dreamed of, envied and detested by those less wealthy than himself. But soon a high official passed by, carried in a sedan chair, accompanied by attendants, and escorted by soldiers beating gongs. Everyone, no matter how wealthy, had to bow low before the procession. "How powerful that official is," he thought. "I wish that I could be a high official." Then he became the high official, carried everywhere in his embroidered sedan chair, feared and hated by the people all around who had to bow down to him before he passed. It was a hot summer day, and the official felt very uncomfortable in the sticky sedan chair. He looked up at the sun. It shone proudly in the sky, unaffected by his presence. "How powerful the sun is," he thought. "I wish that I could be the sun." Then he became the sun, shining fiercely down on everyone, scorching the fields, cursed by the farmers and laborers. But a huge black cloud moved between him and the earth so that his light could no longer shine on everything below. "How powerful that storm cloud is," he thought. "I wish that I could be a cloud." Then he became the cloud, flooding the fields and villages and shouted at by everyone. But soon he found that he was being pushed away by some great force, and then realized it was the wind. "How powerful it is," he thought. "I wish that I could be the wind." Then he became the wind, blowing tiles off the roofs of houses, uprooting trees, hated and feared by all below him. But after a while, he ran up against something that would not move, no matter how forcefully he blew against it, a huge, towering stone. "How powerful that stone is," he thought. "I wish that I could be a stone." Then he became the stone, more powerful than anything else on earth. But as he stood there, he heard the sound of a hammer pounding a chisel into the solid rock and felt himself being changed. "What could be more powerful than I, the stone?" he thought. He looked down and saw far below him the figure of a stonecutter. "Ah, here's the mail. Oh, look, something for you, Pooh." "For me?" said Pooh. "For Mr. Pooh Bear." "Mr. Pooh Bear. That's what it says." "Mr. Pooh Bear," said Pooh in an odd sort of voice. "What's it say?" he asked, climbing onto the writing table and looking over my shoulder. "It's from Finchley's, announcing our third annual shoe sale. All styles, all sizes." "Pooh, you don't need this." "What's that say at the bottom?" asked Pooh. "Free coffee. One more reason to stay away." "Let me examine this more carefully," said Pooh, taking it over by the window. "In order to take control of our lives and accomplish something of lasting value, sooner or later we need to learn to believe. We don't need to shift our responsibilities onto the shoulders of some deified spiritual superman, or sit around and wait for fate to come knocking at the door. We simply need to believe in the power that's within us and use it. When we do that and stop imitating others and competing against them, things begin to work for us. Let's take a couple of examples. In 1927, a 32-year-old man stood on the edge of the lake in Chicago's Lincoln Park, planning to drop beneath the dark waters and drown. His daughter had died, his company had gone bankrupt, his reputation had been ruined, and he was becoming an alcoholic. Looking into the lake, he asked himself what one small man in his position could possibly do. Then an answer came to him. He was now free to take risks, to initiate action on his own, and, by doing so, to help other people. He returned home and committed himself to the work that he believed the universe wanted him to do, instead of what he had been taught to do. He watched the laws of the natural world and altered his own living patterns accordingly, eventually changing his life completely. Those laws were to inspire and support him in his greatest achievements. But without his believing and taking a chance, his contributions to humanity would never have been made, and no one would have come to respect the name of Buckminster Fuller. In 1854, a boy was withdrawn from school in Port Huron, Michigan, for causing trouble. He had been there for 3 months. That was to be the only formal education of his life. He later worked as a laboratory assistant. The job ended when he blew up the laboratory. His employer picked him up and threw him out into the dust, saying that he would never amount to anything. But he had a plan, and he wasn't going to let a little problem or two stop him. He wanted to learn the mechanical applications of natural laws. He eventually became the foremost inventor in American history, with over 1,300 domestic and foreign patents registered in his name, a name synonymous with the problem-solving genius, the name of Thomas Edison. The play-it-safe pessimists of the world never accomplish much of anything because they don't look clearly and objectively at situations. They don't recognize or believe in their own abilities, and they won't stretch those abilities to overcome even the smallest amount of risk. For example, when Rue fell into the stream during the famous expedition to find the North Pole, what did dismal Eeyore do about it? Long after Rue had been carried away by the current, Eeyore half-heartedly hung his tail over the water so that Rue could grab hold of it and pull himself out. Or, more accurately, so that Eeyore would get credit for having tried something. Of course, he didn't really expect it to do any good, and of course, it didn't. Who was going to rescue Rue? Panicky Piglet was jumping up and down and making noises. Ineffective Owl was instructing Rue to keep his head above water. Concerned Kanga was asking if he was all right. Captain Rabbit was calling out commands. But Positive Pooh was looking at the situation, seeing what he could do about it, and trying something. Two pools below Rue, he was standing with a long pole in his paws, and Kanga came up and took one end of it, and between them they held it across the lower part of the pool. And Rue, still bubbling proudly, "Look at me swimming," drifted up against it and climbed out. "Did you see me swimming?" squeaked Rue excitedly, while Kanga scolded him and rubbed him down. "Pooh, did you see me swimming? That's called swimming, what I was doing. Rabbit, did you see what I was doing? Swimming. Hello, Piglet. I say, Piglet, what did you think I was doing? Swimming. Christopher Robin, did you see me?" But Christopher Robin wasn't listening. He was looking at Pooh. "Pooh," he said, "where did you find that pole?" Pooh looked at the pole in his hands. "I just found it," he said. "I thought it ought to be useful. I just picked it up." "Pooh," said Christopher Robin solemnly, "the expedition is over. You have found the North Pole." As Pooh found out with the North Pole, once we see what the situation is and what we can do about it, we need to utilize everything we find along the way in order to accomplish whatever is required. More often than not, the things we need are there already. All we have to do is make use of them. For example, when Piglet was trapped by the flood, "It's a little anxious," he said to himself, "to be a very small animal entirely surrounded by water." Christopher Robin and Pooh could escape by climbing trees, and Kanga could escape by jumping, and Rabbit could escape by burrowing, and Owl could escape by flying, and Eeyore could escape by making a loud noise until rescued, and here am I, surrounded by water, and I can't do anything. Then suddenly he remembered a story which Christopher Robin had told him about a man on a desert island who had written something in a bottle and thrown it into the sea. And Piglet thought that if he wrote something in a bottle and threw it in the water, perhaps somebody would come and rescue him. So he did. And when Piglet's bottle came floating past him, Pooh got the message. But then he had to go see Christopher Robin in order to find out what it said. So he corked up his biggest honey jar, dropped it into the water, and jumped after it. And after a little experimenting with his boat, he floated off to Christopher Robin's house, where the message was read and a rescue planned. Then the two of them realized that they needed a larger boat, so Pooh got an idea. And in an exciting rescue, Piglet was saved by none other than the famous Pooh Bear, discoverer of the North Pole. "Say, Owl, have you seen Pooh lately? I rather thought I saw him putting something into the closet a little while ago," Owl replied. "I wasn't paying much attention to the matter, though." "The closet? Well, I'll just take a look and..." "What is it?" said Owl. "Owl, what are all those boxes doing in here?" "Boxes?" said Owl. "And they're all full of shoes." "Shoes?" said Owl. "Look at this. Loafers, 8.5A. Sandals, 10B. Oxfords, 12.5E. "All styles, all sizes," said Pooh. "Owl, I'm not quite sure, but I believe I suspect something." "It would appear that Pooh is the culprit," said Owl wisely. "When you see him, tell him I want to talk with him, will you, Owl?" "Absolutely." The two fearless rescues just mentioned bring us to one of the most important terms of Taoism, Tzu, which can be translated as caring or compassion, and which is based upon the character for heart. In the 67th chapter of the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu named it as his first treasure and then wrote, "From caring comes courage." We might add that from it also comes wisdom. It's rather significant, we think, that those who have no compassion have no wisdom. Knowledge, yes. Cleverness, maybe. Wisdom, no. A clever mind is not a heart. Knowledge doesn't really care. Wisdom does. We also consider it significant that core, the Latin word for heart, is the basis for the word courage. Piglet put it this way: "She isn't clever, Kanga isn't, but she would be so anxious about Roo that she would do a good thing to do without thinking about it." Tzu not only saved Roo, discovered the North Pole, and rescued Piglet, it also gave Piglet the courage to go get help for Pooh and Owl when Owl's house blew over. Now, Piglet, as we know, is a very small animal, and not exactly the bravest one at that. But when Owl's house fell down, Piglet discovered that he had more courage than he thought he had. "Hello, Owl," said Pooh. "I hope we're not too late for... I mean, how are you, Owl? Piglet and I just came to see how you were, because it's Thursday." "Sit down, Pooh. Sit down, Piglet," said Owl kindly. "Make yourselves comfortable." They thanked him and made themselves as comfortable as they could. "Because, you see, Owl," said Pooh, "we've been hurrying so as to be in time for, so as to see you before we went away again." Owl nodded solemnly. "Correct me if I am wrong," he said, "but am I right in supposing that it is a very blusterous day outside?" "Very," said Piglet, who was quietly thawing his ears and wishing that he was safely back in his own house. "I thought so," said Owl. "It was on just such a blusterous day as this that my Uncle Robert, a portrait of whom you see upon the wall on your right, Piglet, while returning in the late forenoon from a..." "What's that?" There was a loud cracking noise. "Look out," cried Pooh. "Mind the clock. Out of the way, Piglet. Piglet, I'm falling on you." "Help," cried Piglet. "Pooh," said Piglet nervously. "Yes," said one of the chairs. "Where are we?" "I'm not quite sure," said the chair. Are we in Owl's house?" "I think so, because we were just going to have tea, and we hadn't had it." "Oh," said Piglet. "Well, did Owl always have a letterbox in his ceiling?" But after the chair was pulled off of Pooh and he had taken a look around, he came up with a plan. Owl would fly up to the letterbox with a piece of string, push the string through the wire in the basket, and fly down again. Then Piglet would hold on to one end of the string, while Pooh and Owl pulled on the other end. "And there Piglet is," said Owl, "if the string doesn't break." "Supposing it does?" asked Piglet, wanting to know. "Then we try another piece of string." This was not very comforting to Piglet, because however many pieces of string they tried pulling him up with, it would always be the same him coming down. But still, it did seem the only thing to do. So with one last look back in his mind at all the happy hours he had spent in the forest not being pulled up to the ceiling by a piece of string, Piglet nodded bravely at Pooh and said that it was a very clever plan. And at last, he squeezed and he squoze, and then with one last squooze, he was out. Happy and excited, he turned round to squeak a last message to the prisoners. "It's all right," he called through the letterbox. "Your tree is blown right over, Owl, and there's a branch across the door. But Christopher Robin and I can move it, and we'll bring a rope for Pooh. And I'll go and tell him now, and I can climb down quite easily. I mean, it's dangerous, but I can do it all right. And Christopher Robin and I will be back in about half an hour. Goodbye, Pooh." And without waiting to hear Pooh's answering, "Goodbye, and thank you, Piglet," he was off. "Half an hour," said Owl, settling himself comfortably. "That will just give me time to finish that story I was telling you about my Uncle Robert, a portrait of whom you see underneath you. Now let me see, where was I? Oh yes, it was on just such a blusterous day as this that my Uncle Robert..." "Owl said you wanted to see me," said Pooh. "All right, Pooh, why the boxes of shoes in the closet?" "I couldn't help myself," said Pooh. "How's that?" "Well, first there was the card for Mr. Pooh Bear. Then when I got to the store, just for a look..." "Yes?" "The salesman was so nice to me. 'May I help you, sir?' he said. He made me feel important." "Pooh, you don't need those shoes," I said. "I'll take them back," said Pooh. "That's better." Lots of other people will be taking things back too, I suppose.
What?
I saw lots of people there buying things they didn't really need, all over the store.
Quite likely, I said.
I wasn't the only one, he said.
Of course not, Pooh. A lot of people try to buy happiness and importance in the same sort of way. But you can be happy and important without doing that, you know.
So can they, said Pooh.
Well, yes, that's true. So can anyone. Despite what Eeyore once said, when it comes to enjoying life and making use of who we are, all of us can. It's just that some don't. Sitting contented by Walden Pond a few years ago, a wise observer wrote, "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. The desperation may have been quiet then, we suppose. Now, it's deafening. But we don't have to be a part of it. We can stop our desperate clinging to hollow life substitutes and set ourselves free. When we make the first move, the process will begin." And that brings us to the Tiddly Palm Principle, which comes from a song by Pooh. The more it snows, tiddly palm, the more it goes, tiddly palm, the more it goes, tiddly palm, on snowing. It's sometimes referred to as the snowball effect, which can remind you of the time you pushed that little ball of snow along, and it got bigger and bigger until it got so big you couldn't stop it, and it rolled all the way down the hill and flattened the neighbor's car, and soon everyone was talking about the huge snowball that you let get completely out of control. And that may be why we prefer to think of it as the Tiddly Palm Principle instead. Now the principle can work negatively or positively. It can promote cynicism as easily as it can encourage hope. It can build hardened criminals or courageous heroes, stupid vandals or brilliant creators. The important thing is to make it work for yourself and for the benefit of others, or face the ugly consequences. Working with the Tiddly Palm Principle, you use respect to build respect. The more it snows, the more it goes. So Pooh hummed it to him, all the 7 verses, and Piglet said nothing, but just stood and glowed. Never before had anyone sung ho for Piglet. Piglet ho, all by himself. When it was over, he wanted to ask for one of the verses over again, but he didn't quite like to. It was the verse beginning, "O gallant Piglet," and it seemed to him a very thoughtful way of beginning a piece of poetry. "Did I really do all that?" he said at last. "Well," said Pooh, in a piece of poetry, you did it, Piglet, because the poetry says you did, and that's and that's how people know." "Oh," said Piglet, "because I thought I did blinch a little, just at first. And it says, did he blinch? No. That's why." You only blinched inside," said Pooh, "and that's the bravest way for a very small animal not to blinch that there is." Piglet sighed with happiness and began to think about himself. He was brave. So that later, when uninformed Eeyore discovered a new house for Owl to move into, and it turned out to be Piglet's. Just the house for Owl, "Don't you think so, little Piglet?" And then Piglet did a noble thing, and he did it in a sort of dream, while he was thinking of all the wonderful words Pooh had hummed about him. "Yes, it's just the house for Owl," he said grandly, "and I hope he'll be very happy in it." And then he gulped twice, because he had been very happy in it himself. "What do you think, Christopher Robin?" asked Eeyore, a little anxiously, feeling that something wasn't quite right. Christopher Robin had a question to ask first, and he was wondering how to ask it. "Well," he said at last, "it's a very nice house. And if your own house is blown down, you must go somewhere else, mustn't you, Piglet? What would you do if your house was blown down?" Before Piglet could think, Pooh answered for him. "He'd come and live with me," said Pooh. "Wouldn't you, Piglet?" Piglet squeezed his paw. "Thank you, Pooh," he said. "I should love to." "Do you want to be really happy? You can begin by being appreciative of who you are and what you've got. Do you want to be really miserable? You can begin by being discontented. As Lao Tzu wrote, a tree as big around as you can reach starts with a small seed. A 1,000-mile journey starts with one step. Wisdom, happiness, and courage are not waiting somewhere out beyond sight at the end of a straight line. They're part of a continuous cycle that begins right here. They're not only the ending, but the beginning as well. The more it snows, the more it goes. The more it goes on snowing. Chuang Tzu described it this way: "It is widely recognized that the courageous spirit of a single man can inspire to victory an army of thousands. If one concerned with ordinary gain can create such an effect, how much more will be produced by one who cares for greater things?" Applause. A toast to gallant Piglet and fearless Pooh. Sing ho for Piglet. Piglet, ho! Sing ho for Piglet. Piglet, ho! And sing ho for a bear. Sing ho for a Pooh. Sing ho for the life of a bear. When they had all nearly eaten enough, Christopher Robin banged on the table with his spoon, and everybody stopped talking and was very silent, except Roo, who was just finishing a loud attack of hiccups and trying to look as if it were one of Rabbit's relations. "This party," said Christopher Robin, "is a party because of what someone did, and we all know who it was, and it's his party because of what he did, and I've got a present for him, and here it is." Then he felt about a little and whispered, "Where is it?" While he was looking, Eeyore coughed in an impressive way and began to speak. "Friends," he said, "including oddments, it is a great pleasure, or perhaps I had better say it has been a pleasure so far, to see you at my party. What I did was nothing, any of you, except Rabbit and Owl and Kanga, would have done the same. Oh, and Pooh. My remarks do not, of course, apply to Piglet and Roo, because they are too small. Any of you would have done the same. But it just happened to be me. It was not, I need hardly say, with an idea of getting what Christopher Robin is looking for now." And he put his front leg to his mouth and said in a loud whisper, "Try under the table," that I did what I did, but because I feel that we should all do what we can do to help. I feel that we should all... Yes. Well, anyway. Here it is, cried Christopher Robin excitedly. Pass it down to silly old Pooh. It's for Pooh. For Pooh, said Eeyore. Of course it's for Pooh, because he's that sort of bear. Just what makes Pooh so special, anyway, said Eeyore indignantly. Well, Eeyore, if you read the next chapter, you may find out, I said. If we must, said Eeyore.